Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and this week I'm joined by Joe Tomlinson. Hello, Joe.
How's it going?
How have you been?
Yeah, not too bad, man. I had a good sporting weekend this weekend, actually. Exeter Chiefs, a big old win against Lyon in the European Cup, which started off well. And then, yeah, Manchester United, not playing very well at the moment. Look a bit leggy. Our best players look quite tired. But getting the job done and that 3 points, I think, probably sees us over the line in the top four race. I think that's 9 points clear with eight to go. And, you know, Chelsea have got to play Leicester and West Ham. Like, a lot of teams play each other. So I would be surprised to see us drop out from this position. It would have to be a pretty monumental failure. So a good weekend for me, sporting-wise. How about yourselves? What did you get up to?
Well, I watched a little bit of football as well, but didn't really pay that much attention. I didn't have high expectations going into it. And so I'm glad to see that I was right in a way. Yeah. It's nice to be right, even if the result was terrible. But yeah, whenever Arsenal are going to play Liverpool in the weekend, it's not something I exactly look forward to. But Champions League happening this week. I'm on UCL review with Doogie Critchley. So that'll be a good one this evening. Yeah, it's a good round of fixtures. And obviously, we made some pretty punchy predictions last week. So yeah. I want to see how those turn out as well.
I'm excited for the Champions League this week. It has to be said. I'm really excited to see Manchester City versus Dortmund. Big test for Haaland going up against the likes of Ruben Dias and John Stones without Jadon Sancho, who's of course not going to be fit. So I'm looking forward to that one. It has to be said. I hope Dortmund get the job done, like, turn them over.
I'd be absolutely amazed if they do, though.
So, like,
I've got to pick which game we watch tonight, and I'm leaning towards Liverpool Real Madrid. But to be honest, I'm not that excited.
By that game, mate. I'm not excited by Liverpool Madrid. Like, I said that I think Madrid are going to win, but then having watched Liverpool on the weekend, there's just enough of a spark that just makes me panic.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to make people panic about the top four race as well. I think people are now, so our resident West Ham fan Mike Atkins, who was in quite good spirits, is now getting a little bit nervous again. But I think Liverpool are quite an interesting place for us to start, in a way, because what we're going to be talking about today is some of the biggest failures of the season. Now, there's a video on that very topic coming out this week on the 8th. That will be over on Football Daily. And as I was going through it, I was writing it and just thinking, like, every 200 words in this could be a whole story in itself. Like, some of the failures this season have been absolutely staggering. So I wanted to get you on because I do feel like you really relish talking about the negative side of football.
I love to dig people out about football. Absolutely.
Well, I thought you'd have some strong opinions about some of the failures this season. So I was wondering if there's anywhere you'd like to start in particular. Any player, manager, club, or maybe some behind the scenes stuff that's caught your eye this season, which you think needs to be discussed.
Do you know where I want to start? We could start with Liverpool because obviously we just come into that, so it would be a nice segue. But let's save Liverpool. I want to start with Jose Mourinho because I found at the weekend his comments to be quite disturbing. I'll be honest with you. If I was a player, I would be absolutely raging with those comments. I just don't believe in the modern day, and I said this on Winners and Losers, I don't believe in the modern day footballers have the ability to take criticism like they once did. I think the whole of football and everything that surrounds it has changed from the 90s and early noughties. You know, I was watching an interview of Roy Keane yesterday, and he said that he once had such a poor performance under Brian Clough that Brian Clough punched him in the mouth. After a game, and after it, he said, you know what, I looked at Clough and I thought, I respect you now and I really want to battle and win for you. And I thought to myself, if a manager did that now to a player, punched him in the face, you would never hear the end of it. It would be leaked to the media, it would be moaned about, and probably rightly so. And I think the thought process has really changed now, and I don't think Jose Mourinho's tact that he used in the early noughties of throwing players under the bus and publicly saying he needs to improve, and then he did actually generally get a response. You know, if you said Drogba hasn't been playing well, Drogba generally responded. I don't think he can get away with it now. And on the weekend, by saying, you know, same coach, different players, as he did to BBC Radio 5 Live, I think he threw all of his players under the bus with that one comment. And if I was a Harry Kane, or if I was maybe not even one of the better players, maybe if I was a Sergi Reguilon, who's been fine this season, but, you know, isn't a Kane superstar, I'll be raging. I'll be absolutely fuming. And Jose Mourinho right now doesn't have the immediate track record, like the short-term track record, to pull off comments like that. I think that move will have lost in the dressing room, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's what I was about to say. I mean, yeah, to me, it just seems very strange. I'm always suspicious of a manager who doesn't take responsibility. It just seems so weird to me. Like, when things go well, yeah, that was me. When things go badly, the players let me down. And also, I just think that, like, when you watch Spurs and when you look at their stats, what he's saying is just not borne out at all, like, by what's going on. Like, so looking at their stats here, you know, like, they've got 41 expected goals for, and they've scored 51. They've got 36 expected goals against, and they've conceded 32. So Hugo Lloris is saving at above expectation this season, and their forwards, obviously specifically Kane and Son, are scoring at a much higher rate than expected. So the team's performance is about a plus five goal difference team, and instead they've got a plus 19 goal difference. Now, that to me does not bespeak a manager whose tactics are being let down by players not performing to a high level. You know, like, this is a team that's getting horribly outplayed. I mean, like, the Newcastle game from this weekend is genuinely quite worrying. Like, to concede 22 shots to Newcastle, and I think anyone watching that game would say Newcastle were by far the better side. And it's just how late that second goal comes makes it seem like Spurs were, you know, kind of deserved a point, and actually they deserved nothing from the game. They were awful. I can't understand it. And so, and the more I look at them, you know, early days in the season, particularly after that big Man United win, right? We were looking at them and we were like, you know what? This team is pressing high. They're really aggressive. I was looking at the stats and their pressing numbers were all really good. And now the only team that spends more of the time in their own... There are only six teams that spend more time in their own defensive third than Spurs. And only six teams which allow opponents into their own defensive third more than Spurs. Like, this is just a side who, like, will give you territory. If they're a goal up, and to be honest, they've been lucky to be a goal up. There's a really good write-up on this on CBS Sports from Mike Goodman, where he's pointed out that people are talking about Spurs giving up leads, but actually what's weird is they've taken the lead so much, given how poor they've been. Like, you just see a team that sinks deeper and deeper and deeper, and I'm sorry, but I don't see that as a player issue. That's a manager issue, is it not?
I totally agree. I don't understand the philosophy at Tottenham. And let's not forget, I think everybody listening to this and watching this on YouTube, us included, said that at the end of the transfer window, Tottenham were probably the winners of the window, or amongst the top three or four best sides that had that window in the Premier League this summer, or like in August to September or whenever it was, because some of the players they brought in, we were genuinely excited about, weren't we? We said, okay, Bale might not work, but at least it's going to galvanise the club and it's going to have a lot of positivity around it. Sergi Reguilon looks like a really good pickup, even though he might end up having to go back to Madrid. Matt Doherty was supposedly brought in as one of Jose's go-to guys. If he was going to play the three at the back, it's going to be a wing back, very much a Jose sort of battler, isn't it? I think, did Lo Celso sign a permanent this summer? Maybe it was last summer.
It might have been January,
something like that. And there was, of course, Højbjerg brought in, who was, I would say, Jose Mourinho's ideal defensive midfielder. He was desperate for a Højbjerg. The only player they potentially didn't sign was a central defender. And even then, they got Joe Rodon over the line. He's played a few games so far this season, and he hasn't looked awful. So there's not the excuse of the summer window. They've got the world's best or second best striker. I think probably I would still go Lewandowski in terms of out-and-out nines, but certainly all-round striker, I would pick Harry Kane. I think his ability to drop into sort of that 10 space and pick passes is unmatched. They've got one of the world's best finishers in Son Heung-min, who is just incredibly clinical. They've got an incredible ball-carrying midfielder in Tanguy and Ndombele. They've got the France captain in goal. They signed a £30 million left-back, a £20 million right-back, a £20 million centre-back. Like, I struggle to see the excuses of it's all about the players. The players aren't good enough. It's something that follows Jose Mourinho around religiously. He has this weird cult that follows him where people are like, well, look at the players. They're just not good enough. When in reality, there are some extremely talented players there that are either being misused, poorly treated, or he's not getting the best out of them.
Yes, completely agree. And I think as well, there's this tendency among some people, which annoys me, to let Mourinho make the narrative for himself. So the fact that he talks about, you know, well, I always win a trophy, blah, 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 it makes me feel that if Spurs do manage to beat Man City in the final of the Carabao Cup, then everyone will say, oh, well, you know, Jose Mourinho always wins a trophy in his second season, you know, brilliant. But at Real Madrid and at Chelsea, the trophy he won in his second season was the title. At Inter Milan, he won the treble in his second season. Even at Man United in his second season, he won the League Cup and the Europa League. But at Spurs, dumped out of the FA Cup in that ridiculous game against Everton, dumped out of the Europa League, like embarrassingly giving up a two-goal first leg advantage against Dinamo Zagreb. They've lost 9 Premier League games, but apparently if he wins the Carabao Cup, then I guess all is forgiven. Like, I think I kind of, in a way, want them to win the Carabao Cup purely because Spurs fans who said, you know, like, bring in Mourinho, he's a proven winner, will suddenly realise that actually winning the Carabao Cup doesn't feel better than making the top four. It doesn't. Like, I know it's a trophy and the top four isn't, but fundamentally, like, being in the top four actually feels better. I just don't understand it.
I do think, though, because it's Tottenham and they haven't had silverware for so long, they would probably do anything for that League Cup. And even if it meant finishing outside the top four for a season, they would take it. What I think they would...
Sure.
They're currently struggling and realising rapidly is that the football to watch probably doesn't warrant a League Cup. Like, I don't know any Tottenham fan that is currently watching Spurs and enjoying them play. Like, it's all well and good winning that trophy, and they probably would take it to not finish in top four, but would they take it to have to watch this week in, week out? I think they'd be getting pretty close to saying, no, I want another sort of project manager, or I want a new boss. And I think if Jose doesn't win that League Cup, then suddenly this season looks like a huge failure. At the moment, it's teetering on being a big failure, and it probably, in terms of quality of football, has been a failure. But he must finish in either the top four or win that League Cup to stop it being a total disaster.
Yeah, and I mean, they're not safe from the teams below them yet. What, they're in sixth at the moment, but they're definitely going to get overhauled by Liverpool. And then behind
them... They could have jumped to the top. That's what's so frustrating about this Spurs side. They could have been in the top four before that West Ham game, obviously, that we saw last night. They could have overtaken Chelsea with a win against Newcastle. And they, like, on paper, that Newcastle side, nobody can tell me is better than Tottenham. And they dominated Tottenham. Four expected goals is an absolute disgrace against the Steve Bruce side.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. I mean, like, Dwight Gayle and Joe Linton absolutely destroyed them. And I mean, I'm actually a big defender of Dwight Gayle, but maybe things would have looked a little bit better if they'd been in the top four, you know, like with that result. But I don't think anyone would have thought they were there on merit, apart from maybe Jose Mourinho. And now I look at them and I think Everton, 2 points back with a game in hand. Okay, Everton aren't in great form, but still. Villa, 5 points back with a game in hand. Arsenal, only 7 points back, rather. Like, I mean, I don't think Arsenal are going to make that up because Arsenal aren't very good. But at the same time, it's... You're not very safe when you're drawing games against Newcastle. I don't know. I agree. I think if they don't win the Carabao Cup, they're going to need something from the last few games in the Premier League. Like, they're going to need to end the season on a run of great wins or something for Mourinho to have something to justify his continued position there. Because it can't just be, well, we're not going to pay him. Like we're not going to pay him to leave. You know, it would cost us $25 million to get him out the door. It's not good enough for a team of Spurs level. And I also find it ridiculous that somebody as savvy as Daniel Levy hasn't worked out a break clause at the end of the season. I still think he must have done. But I guess we will find out in the summer. I mean, to you, okay, this was a poll that was going round, right?
Mm.
What do you think the odds are that Jose Mourinho is Tottenham manager first day of next season?
Oh, good. Very good. I think really? I would be surprised if he isn't. Yeah, definitely.
Jesus.
I think Daniel Levy sticks by his man, even if he doesn't finish in the top four and loses that League Cup final. I think Daniel Levy's a big, big fan of Jose Mourinho. I think he's wanted him for quite a while and is almost enamoured by him, in awe of him a little bit. And I think it will be to the detriment of Tottenham, and then next season will be the year that it all goes wrong. I think Harry Kane is the man in the summer that has the bigger decision than Daniel Levy over Jose Mourinho. Like, if you're Harry Kane, looking at this now, approaching 28, I think it's time to call it.
Whoa, but do you think he can actually get out?
I don't think he can get out. I think the only way he gets out is if he kicks up a huge stink, hands in transfer requests, refuses to train, and goes a little bit old school with it, because I think he is under too long of and too good of a contract at Tottenham to be sold, especially to a rival. I think, Real Madrid came in with £120 million. I think Daniel Levy might be forced to consider it because Harry Kane might go, look, I want to go. I think if Manchester United or Manchester City came in with that, Daniel Levy would just flat out say no. And I don't know how Kane gets out without kicking up a huge stink, and I don't believe he will, because I think he genuinely loves Tottenham. It's not as if he's putting this weird front on. I think he's a genuine Tottenham fan and wants the club to succeed and for him to be there while that's happening, but it's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen there.
Yeah, I completely agree. But I mean, I think maybe you're right. Maybe Spurs are going to have to be running to the ground before Levy countenances a move. Shall we talk then a little bit about Liverpool? You said you wanted to chat about them. And I put them... spoiler alert, they're at number one in my script for biggest failures of the season.
Yeah, I think it's... Look, but you've got to caveat it, right, with some things that have been out of their control as well. Like, they have definitely been a failure this season by their own standards. And their own standards are extremely high. Like, people say, yes, it's been the biggest drop-off of any title chaser or champion. It has, but let's also caveat that by the fact that Liverpool, of the last two or three seasons, have been taking close to 100 points, an unheard total of Premier League points per season. So the drop-off will seem more monstrous because of their previous successes, and also the fact that they have had the worst possible injury problems to their side. I know that other teams have had injury problems in the past. You know, Man City lost Kevin De Bruyne. They've lost Laporte for extended periods of time. They've lost Aguero for extended periods of time. They have, but they've definitely got a deeper and better recruited squad than Liverpool have managed to do over the last two or three years, who are, it's sort of a 14-man rotating side that Jurgen Klopp has operated with to much success, and now he needs support and backing in this summer window fairly strongly. But I agree, it's definitely been a failure. I just think it's worth caveat, and has maybe not been as much of a failure as people think, especially if they get in the top four.
I think I'm gonna disagree with that.
Okay.
Because I think I can understand what you're saying. Like, yes, their high standards make it seem worse, but they are still comfortably outside the Champions League places going into the last, 8 weeks of the season?
Do you back them to finish in the Champions League places now, though?
No, I don't.
Really? I think Liverpool get top four now.
I don't know. I mean, like, they're 3 points behind West Ham. They're 2 points behind Chelsea. But I know Chelsea have a difficult run in, but Chelsea are pretty good. They had a bad result this weekend, but it was the first bad result.
I mean,
literally the first bad result. And so the issue for Liverpool isn't whether they're the best side in this group of teams from fourth down to eighth or whatever.
Mm.
It's whether they are sufficiently better than Chelsea and West Ham and, I suppose, technically Tottenham to get into those places. And I'm just not convinced that they are. Like, I mean, they don't have a goal difference advantage over Chelsea. They don't have much of one on West Ham, to be honest with you. And I don't know. I just think
I had a look at their running recently, like when I was shooting winners and losers, and it's definitely the easiest running of any of the sides, I think, bar potentially that Manchester United game. And I just think that the return of Diogo Jota is such a huge factor for this Liverpool side that it will just about sneak them in. I think that Chelsea, despite the fact they've been good under Thomas Tuchel and very defensively sound, I've got a feeling that them and West Ham might just have a little bit of a stutter, whilst Liverpool could comfortably win six games in a row, and that'll be enough to get them over the line.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, like, the thing is, six games in a row for Liverpool would put them on 67 points, which means Chelsea, and Chelsea would then only need 16 to finish above that. I mean, I agree that Liverpool can do it, but there's basically no room for error. I think that if Liverpool...
Yeah, definitely.
Like they might need to win out. They might need to win out. They might need to win all their remaining games. And yeah. I always bet against that a little bit. If they go and do it, I'm not like heavily against the possibility of it happening. I think it's totally possible that they make it. But I just think when you've got multiple teams ahead of you,
you want points on the board, don't you? Like you'd rather be in Chelsea or Tottenham's position.
And if any of those teams gets hot, if any of those teams gets lucky, if you get a bad bounce in one game, that can basically be it. If they lose a match, I think it's pretty much done. And so from Chelsea's point of view, they've just got to be consistent. And I know they do have a tough run of fixtures, but I still kind of think, I don't know, like three teams ahead of you, I'm not sure about this one.
It's been undoubtedly a failure of a season, though. And I think Klopp would admit that. But yeah, I think like next season, I immediately expect them to bounce back up towards championship contenders.
Yeah.
Like, so it's not as much of a concerning failure as Tottenham's. It's probably a bigger failure because of the status of the last two or three years, but it's maybe not as long-term concerning. It's a different type of failure, I'd say.
Well, you say that, but I mean, if they don't make the top four, what becomes of the squad? Because the front line, Mane and Salah turn 29 by the summer. Firmino turns 30 in the autumn. What sort of position are they in to strengthen if they do finish outside the top four? Or do you think they just say, you know what, we bank on the fact that we'll get back into the top four next season and we're just going to keep the squad together as it is and hope for the best? Like, I mean, there are lots of different ways to run it, and I'm not really sure what they'll go for.
Well, I think, like, even one season out, I don't think the players will necessarily be desperate to leave, is what I would say. Like, I don't think Salah and Mane will be kicking up a stink at not playing one season in the Champions League after winning the Champions League.
Yeah, it's not about that. I don't think they're going to ask to leave.
And I think I think Jota is sensational. I think, like, is he 23? Around
maybe
that sort of area, maybe 24. But I think he's enough to carry them over the line for at least one more season. And then if it's one season out of the Champions League, if you can get back in it, you've still got Salah, you've still got Diogo Jota, maybe you look to move one of that front three on and replace him. Like, I just still believe that even at 30 or 29, whatever Sadio Mane was going to be that we said earlier, when he's got the full complement of, you know, Virgil van Dijk back, he's got Thiago alongside Fabinho, Joe Gomez is back, Diogo Jota can actually put together a full season, I still think they'll be absolutely fine chasing down a title. So I wouldn't be too worried about the front three for one more year.
Okay, but then I think they're going to have to try and sell somebody next year, and then I think they don't get very much money at all.
Yeah, maybe not. But I think they'll probably, I think they're probably happy to suck up not selling Bobby Firmino. Like, I don't think they'll be massively reliant on selling a Bobby Firmino now they've got Diogo Jota. Like, I think he's going to be their next superstar forward, and they can probably now afford to take some more, like, lower cost risks on players sort of out of France and maybe out of Germany.
Yeah, that's true. I suppose that whether you're in the top four or not, you're probably capable of getting hold of a Jota. It would just be interesting to see, like, what they go for in the summer.
I think,
like,
that's the player they'll target, more Jotas than I don't see Liverpool going in and buying a Jadon Sancho or going in and buy or competing for Haaland. Like, I think they'll be targeting more the Diogo Jotas, maybe that sort of level player.
Okay. Well, I mean, Is there anybody else then? Is there any other failure that has really caught your eye this season? Because I just think there are almost endless numbers of them. Like, I'm looking at Celtic. I'm looking at various transfers, which I think have been borderline disastrous.
Oh, definitely. There's so many disastrous Premier League campaigns. I mean, Sheffield United definitely been an utter catastrophe this season, and some of their transfer business has been shocking. I think they've spent over £120 million since 2019, maybe, something like that. And, you know, Rian Brewster just hasn't worked at all, has it? Sadly, I think he'll probably stay with them and probably be all right in the Championship. You know, probably score a few goals at that level. But it was just such a huge risk, wasn't it, to bring him in? The likes of Oliver Burke has never really worked, has it? I think they got the goalkeeping situation pretty disastrously wrong. Obviously, losing, to be honest with you, a top six goalkeeper or a top eight goalkeeper, maybe, in Dean Henderson, and replacing him with Aaron Ramsdale was an error. Now they look back on it, I think, with hindsight. But equally, Sheffield United, like, not, I don't want to say it's been like, they'll have been like, oh, it's nice to have been there. But I think they would probably have been resigned to a relegation battle this year anyway. So I don't know how much of a failure it's been. The performances have been terrible, though. So yeah, up there. I think Arsenal have been a bit of a failure this season under Mikel Arteta. Just really disappointing. Like, that Liverpool game on the weekend was just shocking. I really, really was getting wound up with the way Arsenal were playing in that game. Just a total lack of intent. Like, all well and good Mikel Arteta setting his side up and stuff, but players have got to commit to it and, like, be committed. And, like, I was watching Aubameyang try and play, like, left wing back at times. I was just getting stressed. I've been really, really frustrated with that Arsenal side. It's obviously had some big bright spots in the likes of Bukayo Saka and Smith Rowe and that breaking through. But if you'd have said, off the back of winning that FA Cup and a little bit of good feeling about Arteta from there, that they'd finish sort of 10th, 11th, peter out in the Premier League. And you never know, they might win the Europa League, which is got to be their focus now. But I think their Premier League campaign it's been pretty disappointing. I think it probably has been a failure, Pat.
No, I completely agree. I mean, like, this is the thing. Like, you look at Arsenal's stats since Christmas, and they've been kind of about fourth or fifth best team in the country. But before that, they weren't just bad. They were god awful. And I mean, like, I look at Arteta's time in charge, and I'd say that of Arteta's time in charge, what, it's been about 15, 16 months now. There's been probably 3 months of that where I've thought Arteta was good. There's been about 4 to 5 months where I've thought that I've been on the fence. And then the rest of it, I've been like, this is rubbish. Like, this is terrible. Like, I can't quite put my finger on it. I mean, this weekend, I suppose, was a little bit difficult. You're playing a side that's much better than you, and you're missing Saka and Smith Rowe. And it seems like Arsenal need kind of two of Saka, Smith Rowe and Odegaard to get anything. You know, like, otherwise they can't pass through teams, they can't impose themselves on a game, they don't really press intensely enough. But yeah, I mean, I suppose the thing is, if you win the Europa League, the season is kind of a success. And I will say that it's better to have been good after Christmas and bad before Christmas than the other way around. Like, at least then you can argue a trajectory, I think. But if it weren't for the fact that some young players, specifically Saka, Smith Rowe, Tierney, Gabriel, if it weren't for the fact that those guys have really been shining this season, I think that it would be very, very hard to feel any kind of positivity at all about Arsenal. And I worry about what they'll do in the transfer window, because I just think that they're, like, they're not a very intelligent club, though. You know, I think Lacazette has been good for us this season. He's certainly been a lot better than Aubameyang. But of course, I wouldn't give him a new contract. And at the moment, there are rumours that could happen. Well, that's sincerely worrying. I mean, like, I don't know what Arsenal are going to do, and I don't have faith that if they do something I haven't thought of, it'll be a clever thing. I think it will likely be even stupider than I imagined, like signing Willian. So I'm fearful about Arsenal.
Yeah, so I definitely think Arsenal probably have been a bit of a failure.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, on the continent, obviously Juventus just an absolute disaster. It's hard to say anything else about them, really, other than this has been a total catastrophe under Pirlo. To be 12 points off the Scudetto, after 28 games, is just a disaster for every Juventus fan, for the entire hierarchy. Like, it's totally feasible Juventus don't finish in the Champions League this season.
Yeah, which would be crazy.
Level on points with Napoli. And it would be absolutely mind-blowingly crazy as well. The recruitment has been so horrible at Juventus. the squad, like, condition, it's such a mismatched bunch. Like, it's awful. And they've still got the Ronaldo problem. Do they sell him? If they sell him, who buys him? And how much do they buy him for? They've got some really exciting attacking talent, you know, like Kulusevski and Chiesa. And then you've got weird, like, Rabios and Ramsey's jammed in there. And it just makes no sense. Makes no sense. And they're playing so badly. They're awful.
I mean, I kind of take a little bit of pleasure in Juventus being terrible because I feel like they've had the rub of the green for so long. I'm kind of pleased that it's happening like this now. On the other hand, I don't think that they... While I agree that they're not good, I don't think that they're, like, not finishing the top four not good. I think they are one of the best four teams in Italy. But the rumours coming out of there are again worrying, trying to shift Ramsey on to probably a mid-table Premier League side. Maybe we'll sell Ronaldo, maybe we won't. Rumours they're going to try and get Calhanoglu, who's still negotiating a deal with AC Milan. Like, these are not sensible moves. And I mean, the Artur Pjanic switch just looks even stranger. Ugh. Like we talked about it for Barcelona at the time because they had no money and they were getting an old player. But fundamentally, Juve still brought in a guy who has done absolutely nothing for them this season. He's played under 1,000 minutes, and I think he's got maybe an assist. I don't know. Like, I just don't know what they're doing with their transfer business. It's like the equivalent of going into a shop and seeing what's on sale and just buying all the stuff that's on sale, whether you want and need it or not.
Yeah, like Weston McKennie was a good pickup. Weston McKennie's worked out very well for them, but then like,
and Chiesa's been phenomenal.
Yeah, but then you look at some of the other business, like, it's just frightening, isn't it? Like, that Artur deal just makes absolutely no sense. Like, who signed that off? Was that, like, at what level of the club was that signed off? It's like Paulo Dybala. What's he got, 1 year left on his deal now? Surely Dybala leaves in the summer. I don't see any way Dybala doesn't leave in the summer. I think he's started less than 10 Serie A games. I know he's had injuries, but if you're him, what are you staying for? What you're staying for? Like, he'll have plenty of suitors. Like, PSG will be all over him, I would imagine. There'll be multiple Premier League sides that'd be interested. Probably the likes of Barcelona would be potentially interested in him at a cut price fee because he's got 1 year left on his contract. They're going to lose an asset for Dybala for like 30, 40 million. Like, how? Like, how bad is the club being run?
Well, this is the knock-on effect, right, of not performing as well as you'd like. You're just in a weaker position when it comes to players who may get offers from other clubs, when it comes to renegotiating deals, when it comes to replacing players. Like, for this reason, I wanted to bring up Dortmund as well. Because Dortmund, early days this season, Dortmund were actually, they had the best stats in Germany. They had some of the best stats in Europe. And then they had a couple of bad results, which actually were kind of unlucky, some of those results. And Lucien Favre just kind of threw his hands up and said, I've had enough, I'm out. And I don't... I understand they wanted to bring in Marco Rosa, but by giving it to, what is he called, Terzic, for the rest of the season, they've ended up in a disastrous situation. They're now fifth in the Bundesliga. They're 7 points away from the Champions League spot.
They're not getting
League
Champions spots. League football, are they? It's not happening.
No. It's and this is a side that has incredible talent. I mean, like, they've got one of the best young attackers in the world in Jadon Sancho. They've got the best young striker in the world outside of Mbappe in Erling Haaland. So between those two players, they've got about £300 million worth of talent. Yeah. And yet they're currently, I think, something like about 10 points behind Wolfsburg. This is really, really troubling. So I just don't know really whether it was worth it. Like, waiting for Marco Rosa. Marco Rosa is a great talent. But at the very least, they should have just said to Favre, no, we believe in you, please stick out the rest of the season. And they'd have been totally competent and fine. And also, I think that the fact that they're so far back, a lot of it is kind of like, oh, well, they weren't going to win the title anyway, because Bayern were gettable this season. And Leipzig remained in the hunt and are still in the hunt. And I just think that Dortmund could have been up there. They could have been competing. And instead, they're going to end up in the Europa League next season. And if Haaland and Sancho go, they're in serious trouble. Like, that's a big job for Marco Rosa to rebuild a side that's lost those two players.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Dortmund squad's goal output. If you take Haaland out, it's horrifying. There's only one player who scored more than four goals, and that's Sancho, and he's got six. Like, Haaland's on 21, Sancho's on six Bundesliga goals, and then it's Mats Hummels. Like, it's an absolute catastrophe right now. And the biggest problem for Dortmund will remain that they can't get fans in that stadium. So they have absolutely no income. Like, that is the driving force behind their income, is fans on seats at the Westfalenstadion. It brings in a huge amount of money for the club. They're not a cash-rich owned club. Like, they don't have some huge backer who's going to come in and rescue this situation. They're not the type that are going to go to a bank and ask for a massive credit line off the back of this and say, look, we need £300 million to dig ourselves out of this hole. Because losing out on Champions League football, they're losing £50 million a season there. They're probably losing more than that, a lot more than that, by not having fans in stadiums. This is an absolute catastrophe, not getting Champions League football. They absolutely have to sell one of their star players this summer. I think it'll be Sancho. I don't think it'll be Haaland. I think they'll kick and scream and do all they can to get £150 million if they're going to sell Haaland, because they'll just be willing to back him to get them back into the Champions League next season. Because if they don't have Haaland next summer and they don't have Sancho, Champions League, again, is a massively uphill battle. I know that Marco Rosa is an extremely talented manager and they're lucky they've managed to get him through the door, but the squad isn't that great. It's got some unbelievable players. Haaland, Sancho, you know, Gio Reyna looks an exciting talent. Jude Bellingham is undoubtedly an exciting talent. But it also has, you know, some big holes in it, doesn't it? Like, Mats Hummels is 32 and still playing 2,500 minutes of Bundesliga football for them this season. Like, Emre Can's played 1,700 minutes of football. Marco Royce, 1,700 minutes of football. It's not the best squad in the league by distance. It's just got some outstanding young players. And I think Jadon Sancho's definitely leaving. I don't see a way they keep hold of Jadon Sancho. And there's absolutely full chance they get 120 million for him now. They'll do well to get 80-90 million for Sancho in this market.
Yeah, his status has really dropped this season. A bit unjustly, I think. But the fact that, you know, people are talking about leaving him out of the England squad, they're going to be worried about that. They're going to be worried.
But he's still, like, been one of the best sort of, like, players of his age group in Europe, even though his goal output has dropped significantly. Like, and I think clubs aren't going to be blink. Like, Manchester United, they might not be as interested, for instance. But if Borussia Dortmund go, okay, you can have him for £75 million, €90 million, I think United won't say no. United were bidding £100 million for him last summer. That interest doesn't go up in smoke overnight. And it won't put off a Real Madrid or a Barcelona, if they can finance it, from paying £75 million for an asset like Jadon Sancho.
No, I agree. I mean... It'll be interesting to see what they do, because I think they need to strengthen at right back. I agree. I think that there need to be some centre back options kind of reevaluated, especially because I think Zagadou has a year left on his contract this summer and has been heavily linked with Arsenal again.
Roman Bürki still playing in goal for them, for goodness sake. Like, get him out of sticks. Honestly, get him out of sticks. He's 30. He hasn't been good for about 4 years.
Well, there is one thing I'd like to talk about before I let you go today. And it's not a team, and it's not a manager, and it's not a player. But I wanted to talk to you because I was hoping I could get a Joe Tomlinson rant about VAR and the handball rule, which to me, I think these may be the biggest failures of the season. the fact that there's no consistent handball rule, like, it's been blamed on VAR, and I don't think it's all down to VAR. I think the handball rule has got worse and worse somehow over the last couple of years. What is your take on the way the rules have developed this season? And what do you think how do you think it's changing the experience of being a football fan?
Right. So when all this started, when VAR was first introduced, and I remember it vividly at that World Cup in 2018, I think we all came away with it thinking, actually, do you know what? It might not be as bad as we thought. It's some entertaining incidents in that World Cup around VAR. The implementation in the Premier League has made me go from, it has to happen, and I think it will happen, to get rid of it tomorrow. I don't ever want to see VAR again. It's an absolute shambles, front to back. Football was undoubtedly more entertaining without it. And now what we've done is we've offset entertainment value and sort of moments of sheer joy. We've offset that with going from a 97% success rate with referee decisions to a 98.5% decision rate. Like, is that 1.5% worthy of such a diminishing entertainment return? It's absolutely not. I would rather see my team suffer at the hands of a poor Mike Dean decision once a season than see such consistent poor implementation from referees who are now getting exposed by technology. That's the basics. Let's have it right. This is not technology's fault. The fault lies with the human error that's using it. People are watching decisions on monitors and still coming to the wrong conclusion. Anybody who sits there and listens to Peter Walton on BT Sport now realises why VAR is failing. Because there is 20 Peter Waltons in the Premier League right now making the same decisions as he is. They would rather support the referee in an incorrect decision-making process than actually allow the correct decision to be made. So scrap it tomorrow. It's an absolute mess. As for the handball rule, rewrite it, because we've been fiddling with this stupid rule for the last 18 months. I've seen it change 3 or 4 times. Get it sorted. Get rid of VAR, because I've absolutely had enough now. I was such a pro VAR fan at the start. Now I'm totally anti VAR. It's got to go, but it won't. Genie's out the ball.
Well, I'm not sure I can add anything to that. Like, I mean, I have my own thoughts about VAR, but you could check those out if you watch FD's 10 biggest failures of the season going live on Thursday. Joe, thank you very much for joining us today. I always appreciate your views on the changes in the game. Is there anything that you'd like to plug before we say goodbye?
Well, go and watch Winners and Losers. Obviously, discussing slightly more detail about Jesse Lingardinho, who is having the resurgence of his life. An absolutely superb situation for Manchester United. I don't think it could have worked out any better for the club, having a player out on loan, frying, coming towards the end of his contract in the last summer. We can finally make some money on him.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously I don't like to see Man United succeed in any way, but I do feel kind of good about Jesse Lingard. I like him as a West Ham man, so I kind of hope he stays there. Thank you very much to you guys for watching, listening. Please make sure that you subscribe using whichever podcast app you favour, or at Football Daily Podcast on YouTube, and we will see you next week. Thanks very much. Bye.